Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm here on behalf of Michael Phillips today. I'd like to start by addressing the government's argument that even if Mr. Phillips' interpretation of the statute is correct, the motion to dismiss was properly denied. That argument contradicts the understanding of the parties that entered into the plea agreement. I went back yesterday and listened to the recording of the change of plea hearing. There was no, at this point, no transcript made of that hearing. At that hearing, both the parties and the district court agreed that there would be no need to go to a trial just simply to litigate what would be a jury instruction issue. Instead, that the issue was properly raised for purposes of preserving appeal by the motion to dismiss. So in that sense, it was the understanding of the parties that this issue was properly presented for appeal, and that if this court were to agree with Mr. Phillips' interpretation, that would then be dispositive of the case. Turning to the statute then at issue, while we understand that generally knowledge requires only proof of knowledge of the facts and not knowledge of the law, that maxim can be contradicted by the plain language of the statute, and that's what we have here. What we have is a statute with one element of mens rea and one element of actus reus. The mens rea is knowing, the actus reus is to violate the statute. That's very different than even in the same statute, subsection C5, which tells you that any person who knowingly releases into the ambient air any hazardous pollutant listed under this chapter, in that case, the knowing obviously just goes to releasing the material and not knowledge of the law. In C1, to the contrary, the statute itself puts knowledge of the law at issue, makes it an element of the crime. And that's what's different. And essentially, that's was Phillips' argument below, that the government would need to prove.
What, you rely on any person who knowingly violates any requirement? Is that what is clear?
Yes.
I don't think it's clear.
There you have it. The lines are drawn.
I think there's only one actus reus, and that's to violate. I mean, it normally has to modify something in this section, and that's the violation. There's nothing else. Everything else is sort of a laundry list of the things that you could violate.
But it's easily read just to mean you have to knowingly violate in the sense you knew it was asbestos and so on, right?
I understand that's generally how the cases have gone on this. Mm-hmm. I think the plain language speaks to that.
Plain language, honestly, it's obviously ambiguous, right? Violate any requirement could mean, yeah, violate any requirement about handling asbestos. So you have to know it's asbestos.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that given this long-standing maxim,
which is so pointless.
That's what we do, you know.
How about a reason? Can you think of a reason why Congress or whoever drafted this regulation might want to require that the person actually know about the regulation?
Right. Well, I think if you look at the statutory structure, we have negligent conduct, we have pure strict liability conduct with smaller penalties. This is at the higher end of the most severe penalty. You would want this penalty to apply to the sort of people who are in the remediation business.
Look, he owns a building, right? He knows that there are lots of regulations about buildings. What you can do, you know, usually to make any change that affects the exterior, you have to have a permit. So he must know that there are regulations governing what you can do. He must have heard about asbestos. And so he may not know there's a criminal penalty, but he should know that there are regulations governing this sort of work, and he should look at them before he does it, right? It's as simple as that.
Well, but even so, Your Honor, he could do that, and under that same scenario, violate a provision of this chapter with less severe penalties. And I say under the structure.
I don't know what that has to do with anything. If he looks at the regulations, if you're going to be in the business of renovating buildings or reconstructing or destroying, you have to be familiar with the law, which includes regulations that have heavy penalties, light penalties, and so on. So he knows he's taking. I mean, if he looks, he would. If he had read this, he would have learned that he was taking a risk.
Right, and we believe that the law should impose that he should have knowledge of that.
Well, that's ridiculous. That just makes him into a that turns him into an ostrich. So he says, "Look, I better not read about any. I'm not going to read anything about regulations involving work on buildings, because if I don't read it, then I can do anything."
But he can't under this own statute. He could be violating the regulation without knowledge in several sort of ways that allow for criminal punishments, just the same. And so the question
is, what does that mean? I don't understand.
Well, he could be found to negligently have released asbestos in the ambient air and still be subject to a criminal penalty. You can violate.
Well, I don't understand. How would he know that there was such a criminal penalty if he'd never read the regulation?
Well, I'm saying he does to violate a statute, a different subsection. You wouldn't have to know that there's a regulation governing this. You can, as a matter of strict liability or a matter of negligence, you commit an act that would violate the statute, and that would be...
You're relying on some other language in the statute?
Yeah, sub C 2 through 5 list a number of different ways in which the statute can be violated, several of which Mr. Phillips' conduct in this case could have fallen under. The C1...
Well, like what? Where are you looking at?
In sub 4, any person who negligently releases into the ambient air any hazardous air pollutant...
I don't see that. Where is that?
It's subsection C4.
C4?
Right.
C4, I don't think. Okay. Oh, any person who negligently releases, yes. Yeah.
And so his conduct could have, without knowing anything about the law or without imposing any normative judgment about whether he should know something about the law, his conduct just in acting would fall under that. There is also civil penalties for just strict liability violation of an EPA regulation governing asbestos.
Mm-hmm.
So under this structure, Your Honor, what I believe is when you're holding somebody to the highest, to one of the two highest criminal penalties, you should require greater mens rea. And I think that in the statutory structure bears this out, that...
So even if someone told him that this was illegal, that wouldn't be enough. He'd have to actually know the exact statute. Because I think Kurth told him what they were doing was illegal. He responded that you just had to work with it 10 or 15 years to get sick.
Although that language is in the plea agreement, that was not agreed to. That was just the government's offense. So that those facts are in dispute. But even assuming those facts, I would agree, yes, for the C1 violation, you would have to know the law. That under the facts as they are there, that would be a violation of any other subsections of the statute, but not C1.
So did he also dispute all this business about how he wanted everything removed at night, loaded in his truck?
For the purpose of the change of plea hearing, yes. And he submitted his own version of the offense with the PSR, but I don't have those facts before me.
What is the specific requirement he violated?
Well, I think the violation for which he pled guilty to was involving transporting and storing asbestos in violation of the regulations.
Mm-hmm. Well, how is that different from negligently releasing any hazardous waste?
I don't believe it is, Your Honor. I think he could, his actions could have allowed him to be convicted of either section. I mean, assuming that the government...
I don't see what the difference is. I mean, here, you just have to... you have to take a second step and find out what the requirement is, right?
Right.
So what? Okay, so if he reads your subsection 4, any person who negligently releases in the ambient air, okay, then he knows into this. If he reads any person who knowingly violates any requirement, Then he says to himself, if he's a careful person, well, I better find out what those requirements are. As soon as you find out what the requirement is, you know, well, yeah, I'm violating it.
Right.
So what's the difference?
Well, I think it holds... The idea, I believe, in the way the structure is developed, is to hold the sort of persons to whom are in the industry and who would have knowledge, remediators of asbestos. Those are the sort of people, when they go ahead and violate the statute and they're in a position to know better, those are the people who should have the higher penalty. The people who are just have one apartment complex they're trying to remodel, those are the people who fall into the negligent or the strict liability. And the statute is geared up that way so that the people who would be most culpable, as by who we want to hold most culpable, should have the greater penalty.
It looks that way. Any person who knowingly violates any requirement, that's very broad. That person is in trouble.
Right. I understand that's what the... And that's the government's argument, that all you have to know is that it's asbestos. We feel that the way it's written and the structures indicate that it should be a higher level of knowledge, that there should be a knowledge of the statute.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Fall. Mr. Brabender?
Thank you, Alan Brabender, representing the United States of America. The only issue that the defendant properly preserved for appeal is the issue of whether the indictment is sufficient to survive a motion to dismiss. And it is sufficient. To survive a motion to dismiss, an indictment needs to recite the elements of the charges in such a way as to inform the defendant of the nature of the charges against him, and also it needs to define the crime sufficiently so as to allow the defendant to raise a double jeopardy defense in the future. This indictment clearly does that. It recites all the elements of the crime. It essentially tracks the statutory language, which courts have said is generally sufficient in and of itself. And it also defines the offense in each count by time and place so that the defendant can raise a double jeopardy defense in the future. The indictment is plainly sufficient on its face, and for that reason this court should affirm, and it doesn't need to address the defendant's argument regarding the meaning of knowingly for purposes of 7413C1 of the Clean Air Act, unless this court has any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fall, and thank you, Mr. Brown.